Week 2. No one saw this coming. An unexpected answer. On our journey up until now through the 12, we have learned at least one thing. God knows what's going on. He is not distant from our experience. He is present and active in the world that He created and in human history. So if the question is, God, are you seeing all this evil happening? Then the answer is going to be yes. And if we ask, are you going to do anything about it? Then the answer is also going to be yes. Be careful what you wish for, though. To ask God to deal with evil in the world does not exclude some in favor of others. If I pray for my friend or family member to turn from a sinful life to Christ for salvation, because they sure need it, I have to ask myself whether or not I take my own sin as seriously as I take theirs. Is it possible for me to point fingers at others and ask God to fix their flaws when I should first recognize my own deep need for the work of Christ every day in my own life? It certainly is. Matthew 7:1-5. The biblical prophets Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, and Jeremiah all spoke and wrote at around the same time. If you remember the timeline we looked at the beginning of our journey, the date 586 BC is significant. Habakkuk is probably writing just before 612 BC, when the city of Nineveh fell to Babylon and Assyria was wiped out. That means we are less than 30 years away from that 586 date here. Some biblical scholars like Paul R. House, the Unity of the Twelve, sees a consistency in the way the minor prophets present their prophecies. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, and Micah seem to declare the sins being committed and call out the offenses of mankind against God. Nahum, Habakkuk, and Zephaniah tend to fall under the topic of judgment on those sins. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi are the last three, and they seem to reflect a message of restoration. Habakkuk falls under the judgment column, and in these next verses, we can see why. The time had come when something had to be done. Sadly, what Micah predicted earlier had come true in full. Quote, "The wound has reached the gate of my people, Jerusalem." Micah 1:9. All of the failures and deceitfulness of the political, civic, and religious leadership that we saw in the northern kingdom had now come to the southern kingdom of Judah. According to Habakkuk, everywhere you looked, there was violence, unethical practice, gross iniquity, and blatant wrongdoing against the poor and vulnerable at every level. The justice that God looked for in Micah 6:8 never raised its head. Injustice was the name of the game. The power-hungry and status-seekers ruled the courts and perverted the law of God. Those who loved God and His ways felt surrounded by those eager to stomp them out. You and I might be tempted to take up a lament against all of that ourselves had we lived then. People who looked for justice had nowhere to go. Those who desired to live in ways that honored God were marginalized and openly opposed. And this was Jerusalem. The one place you would expect to go to find godliness and righteousness held in high regard. No longer. International impact. The questions were, how long and why, from Habakkuk to God in reference to the wickedness around him. God's answer stunned him. God was not just going to deal with the wickedness of Jerusalem. He was going to deal with sin far beyond Judah's borders. What Habakkuk was about to get was a serious perspective shift rising from the streets of Jerusalem outward to the nations of the world. This was big news. God told Habakkuk to write this message in big, bold letters. Look among the nations and see. Wonder and be astounded, for I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. Habakkuk 1:5. The impact of what God was doing would be felt internationally. Remember the cruel Assyrians of Nahum's prophecy? God was dealing with that whole kingdom now. Because this message would be astounding to hear, Habakkuk 1:5, it would have had to come before the fall of Nineveh. No one saw that event coming. The speed of Assyria's collapse and destruction was shocking. If the ancient world had newspapers, they would have had a hard time keeping up with all the war news. God is patient and long-suffering, not wanting anyone to perish, but all to come to repentance. Yet when he decides it's time to move in his justice, he acts swiftly to accomplish what he sets into motion. His judgment was not on just a particular group. It was on sin and human atrocity in all corners of the ancient Near East. Jerusalem had made the choice to reject God's warnings over and over and to stop their injustice and wickedness, and had become a reflection of the pagan nations around them. God's judgments are just, so even his own people would have to answer for their godless actions that deprived the needy and perverted God's justice. Repentance was asked of pagan Nineveh. They later despised it. Repentance was asked of God's people in Jerusalem. They also despised it. Judgment was all that was left. However, Habakkuk had something very important to lean upon in a message of judgment. It's something we have to rest upon as well. It's the unchanging character of God. Habakkuk's response never ceases to amaze me. No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number one, it can be easy to want God to deal with brokenness and sin in the world around us, but not to open up our own lives to his work. Is it important to start with ourselves first in praying for change and for God's redeeming work in the world around us? Number two, are we afraid God may work in us first to change our perspective and attitudes if we begin our prayer that way? Might that keep us only complaining about issues and not actually praying to God about them? We shall not die. If I had asked God what he was doing about all the corruption around me and God told me what he told Habakkuk, judgment within the household of God and without, I wonder how I would have responded. Would I have said, I don't think that's right. I was talking about everyone else, not the good people like me. What a rock-solid faith in God Habakkuk had. One word. Confident. He was confident of the goodness of God. Faced with the news that God was raising up a rascally bunch like the Babylonians to handle the judgment ahead, Habakkuk had an incredible response. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? we shall not die. O Lord, you have ordained them as a judgment, and you, O Rock, have established them for reproof. Habakkuk 1:12. How could he respond without freaking out at all of the uncertainty, fearfulness, and sweeping calamity that was coming in the thundering hooves of the Babylonians' war horses? Only one way. He knew the God with whom he spoke. He knew his character. He knew the scriptures that declared the goodness of God. He walked with God every day. He trusted God's justice. He was confident in God. He did not question God's judgment because it was unexpected or beyond his reasoning. With resolution and praise to God, Habakkuk declared, "We shall not die." That didn't mean God's words were easy for him to hear. O. Palmer Robertson writes of how hard it had to have been. Only the gift of the inspiring spirit of prophecy would make it possible for a person to declare with faithfulness the utter destruction of his own people and land. Robertson, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah. Hard questions, hard answers. A quick word needs to be said here about verse 12. In the English Standard Version that I am using, it reads, "We shall not die." However, in some other versions, the verse reads, "You shall not die," meaning God. There is some discussion on the best interpretation here, since ancient texts differ. One thought is that at some point in the distant past, Hebrew scribes changed the verse from "you shall not die" to "we shall not die," because considering the possibility of the death of God was very offensive. I'll refer to the Bible Expositor's commentary here. Their view, and the view of many biblical scholars, is that using "we" here is the better choice than the alternate reading of "you." The origin and value of this alteration is, however, doubtful. And since the Masoretic text, Hebrew version of the Old Testament, is supported here by the Septuagint, Greek version of the Old Testament, and Symmachus, Roman statesman, Christian convert, and historian, and implicitly by ancient text found at Qumran, there are no good grounds for abandoning its reading. Armading Habakkuk. When we ask hard questions of God, if he replies with hard answers, will we trust him? Habakkuk knew that he could. Though destruction would come, Jerusalem would fall, and what men trusted in above God would be pillaged by invaders, Habakkuk knew that with God, the remnant seeking him would always have a future. "Are you not from everlasting?" he asked. He reminded himself of God's faithfulness in Israel's past. If God was faithful then, he would be now. That's a good reminder for us not to forget what God has done for us in the past, when we face trials of various kinds. Pressing pause on the present and considering God's grace in the past is very encouraging. His ways are everlasting ones. His words are reliable, no matter how the situation may appear. Habakkuk knew God would not break his promises made to his own people. Things were going to be very different and hard. But God was not abandoning his people in his judgment. Things would have to change, but God was not going to change. The deep truths of God's faithfulness can be challenging to lean on in frightening times, but they are sure as the sunrise. when things seem in jeopardy, when life hangs in the balance, when all we long for stands on the edge with no hope in sight, how confident are we in God? Do we obsess about the issue at hand and worry ourselves to death? It's not healthy concern and understanding I'm talking about. It's the feeling of, God, if you don't do something about this, I will. What if God begins to handle the painful issue at hand in ways we don't expect? Do we rest in Him, knowing that He works all things for our good? Or do we resist Him and complain, pulling against the ropes like mules that would rather do nothing than go in God's direction? What if we can't tell if God is working on our behalf at all? What if the time of pain is an extended one, and all seems to be slipping away into darkness? What then? Will you trust Him? Will I? Job was a man who understood this. Both he and Habakkuk were called to endure suffering, which we might say was undeserved. As men righteous before God in their actions and relationship with Him, they were called to go through suffering for His purposes and ultimately for their own great good. Job says something that gets me every time I read it. His confidence in God when He seems silent and distant is powerful. Behold, I go forward, but He is not there, and backward, but I do not perceive Him. On the left hand, when He is working, I do not behold Him. He turns to the right hand, but I do not see Him. But He knows the way that I take. When He has tried me, I shall come out as gold. Job 23:8-10. The people who sought God's goodness and righteousness in Habakkuk's day would have to go through that same hardship as the rebellious people who brought on the judgment of God. Everyone was affected, but that's where the rubber met the road. That's where the bloom at the heart of Habakkuk is fullest and most fragrant. The declaration by God Himself to Habakkuk is as potent now as it was then. It sounds simple, but it is a statement that encompasses every stage and experience of life. It's as deep as any statement that we will find in the Minor Prophets. In regards to Habakkuk's questions, God simply says this: the righteous shall live by his faith. Habakkuk 2:4. No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number 1. If we ask God hard questions, are we okay if He gives us tough answers? What kind of faith is required to say yes to a tough answer? Number 2. Things might have to change when God steps in to deal with sin and brokenness, but God doesn't change. Though God may lead us through difficult days, what are some qualities about God's eternal character that we can lean on? Number 3. In what ways does Job's expression of faith in chapter 23 echo Habakkuk's expression of faith?